Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki sit down with Mike Zarek, Extension Specialist with the University of Georgia Extension. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
How is David? You've had a busy few days here.
Well, it's been really interesting. We've had a really good visit with Mike, and we did about 8 different farm visits, and got to visit with some farmers at night for supper and some different things. And we'll have a big program tomorrow, and it should be a really good time. I've learned a bunch. I feel like a lot of our producers have learned a bunch too, you know, just sitting and talking with Mike at the different poultry houses, mm-hmm. and looking at some things that maybe they can do better and those kind of things. So it's been a really good visit, and we were sure glad to have him up here for sure.
I think this week is a perfect example. One of the things that I've enjoyed most in my extension career, I've been an agent now, Mike, for almost 28 years. One of the things I've enjoyed most is the fact that we, as agents, have the freedom to deliver our programs in a variety of different ways. We get to meet the people where they are when they need it. And this week's been a perfect example of that. You've been able to do farm visits. We've had agent trainings. We've worked with industry personnel. Going to have a producers meeting in-house tomorrow.
Yeah, we've about covered all of the gamut of different ways to be able to, you know, to be able to help people. And we had some industry people there this morning at a couple of farm visits and got to visit with them a little bit. So, I mean, we've had everybody, flock advisors, folks that work with Purdue. And, we just had, just a really good visit. And when we get Mike up here, we try to cram as much stuff in the middle of him, you know, being able to do things as we possibly can. So he's been a real, real trooper. And just, you know, and a lot, you think about when you visit 8 different poultry houses, you cover a lot of the same information. But Mike was just as enthusiastic on the 8th time as he was on the first time. So, I mean, he just, you know, has done a great job.
Well, I think, too, any time that you can do that on-farm trainings, it just makes such a big difference, because it's one thing to be sitting in a room and you've got a picture of something up on a screen, and it's completely different when you're standing in the field or in this situation in that poultry barn and being able to look at this and point out, like, why this may be happening or why something may not be working just like it should or what like they want it to be. It's just completely different, kind of like a picture's worth 1,000 words, but it's just like when you're live like that. And then, you know, one of the key things right before we left, you know, when you was meet with us, it was like, well, I can't exactly tell you what we're going to talk about until we walk in the house, and once we get in there, and we'll just see where it leads. And I think that's just a type of education that most people are going to walk away from and learn something, and they're going to enjoy it. And you all did a great job on scheduling this training and putting it together, and your volunteers that help you do that. And, it's just a great training every year. I enjoyed it last year and did today too.
I didn't get to be a part of the podcast last year when you did it, but the producers meeting, I was here for that. So the podcast is just another opportunity for folks to learn from, just like the visit you did today.
Absolutely. Mike, I know you have had a busy few days. Kind of talk with us a little bit about some of the things that you saw, some of the things that may have stood out in your mind, and maybe some things that, you know, that may be true about all poultry houses that, you know, that folks need to check, you know, and need to see about.
Well, you know, this is my dream type of visit. You know, you go someplace and you just give a presentation and you're going, well, did I really address the issues that people have? I could be thinking they have this problem, but maybe this is the problem. So my favorite thing to do all the time is if I give a presentation someplace, I go, hey, can we go out in the field for a couple of days prior to that? See what your houses look like. Let me see where I think the biggest opportunities for improvement are. So this type of setup, again, classic extension setup, I think I'm just thrilled to be here. It's just, I really enjoy it because I learn as much as I teach in these things, you're going, okay, I haven't seen a lot of free range houses. You're going, okay, that's sort of interesting, looking at things mm-hmm. to do. And everybody does things differently. And you really have to get out of your box to be able to see, okay, I thought this was an absolute. You go, no, that's not an absolute, but I think this. So it was very, again, it was fun. It was lightning. I love, you know, out there working with growers and mm-hmm. giving them some feedback, some things that will make a difference in their houses. And, you know, when it comes to summertime ventilation, the thing, it's, I used to people, it's airspeed. That's what it is. It's not the pads, it's not this, it's not that, it's the airspeed. So, you know, when I'm going out in the summertime, that's what I'm going to look for first and foremost, to say, okay, what is the airspeed in these houses? And quite frankly, the more airspeed, the better. Yep, it increased cost with more airspeed. But really today, with the birds we have and the densities we're growing at and climate in the southeast, you know, we're really looking for airspeeds between a minimum of 600 feet per minute and 800 feet per minute. So when I'm going to these farms, I'm going, okay, what is the air velocity? Do we have enough to keep the air cool? Keep the birds cool? And it's a most one of the things I guess is sort of disheartening at times is a lot of growers don't know what the airspeed is. You know, they know the temperature because the controller reads it and they see that and all that. So you ask a grower, what's their airspeed? And I don't think a lot of people really understand that is the number. Mm-hmm. You know, if you just, it's like I have a car. How many miles per gallon do you get? I want to know that. Right. You know, as a chicken house, what is my airspeed in these houses? Because that's what will make a difference mm-hmm. on these hot days. Whoever has the most airspeed wins. And trying to impress upon people, you know, do we have the right airspeed? Is it uniform across the width of the house? I think that is the message. And we get people a lot of times worry too much about how they're running their pads and things like that. You go, no, got to get the airspeed because it really is true.
For the folks that may be listening that are new to the poultry industry or just interested in learning more, whether they're in the industry or not, just explain a little bit about how to check the what the wind speed is, but then just kind of why is it so important? Because some, you know, I know last year when during this training, you know, I learned so much, I mean, about that, and so just share a little bit about that. You know, why is it so important?
You know, when it comes to cooling, whether we're talking chickens, hogs, people, horses, cattle, it doesn't matter. It's all about moving air over an animal. Is that we're producing heat. If we don't lose heat, our body temperatures go up. And you're going, the reason that we get hot during hot weather is not the external heat that gets it, it's the heat inside of our bodies. And the hotter it gets, the harder it is for us to lose heat, and the warmer we'll feel. And the same thing, you know, when we're dealing with chickens, you're going, okay, they're growing fast, they're producing a tremendous amount of heat. They're producing roughly 5 times the amount of heat per pound than we are. Mm-hmm. So you think they're growing fast, and we're thinking, okay, they're producing this heat. How do we get the heat off of them? And you say, well, great, we can use air conditioning. You're going, well, that's extremely expensive, a lot of power, a lot of operating costs. We'd probably, you know, double or triple the cost of our houses and probably use 3 to 4 times the amount of power that we currently are. So it's not a viable option. So it just comes down to the simple fact. How do you cool anything? Blow air over it. I have a hot bowl of soup. I want to eat it. Well, just blow over it. You remove that heat. And that's what we're looking for birds. It's not that complex. The higher the airspeed we have over the birds, the more heat we pull off the birds, the cooler the bird feels, the more feed it will eat. So we have evaporative cooling pads, and evaporative cooling pads are a nice way to drop the temperature, but the problem with evaporative cooling, it's a double-edged sword, is it's called evaporative cooling. That means it drops the temperature through the evaporation of water. So though we can drop the incoming air temperature using evaporative cooling pads, we're going to raise the humidity. If we drop the temperature 10 degrees, we're going to increase the humidity to 25%. And if we were out in Arizona, you're going, hey, that's great. We're going to, you know, it's 100 degrees outside, 10% humidity. we're going to cool the air and the humidity comes up and that's great. But, you know, we're in the southeast and you're looking at night, it's 100%. During the day, it's we're lucky it drops to maybe 60%. So here we are, we're going to drop the temperature, great, but we're going to typically increase the humidity of that air coming into the poultry house to 80, 85%. So, you know, our dream on a really hot day is to drop the temperature to 80 degrees and increase the humidity 85%. And you go, well, that doesn't sound good. It isn't if you don't have air blowing over the birds.
Mm-hmm. And the air kind of cancels. It doesn't really cancel it out, but it within the ranges of the temperature and humidity, as long as you have that airflow, a little bit of movement either way is not going to be that detrimental.
It's, you know, you look at the bird itself. You know, the bird, how it cools itself is through evaporating water for its respiratory system. And so here it is, they have their own internal evaporative cooling pads, and that's the challenge with birds, is that they're trying to lose heat through evaporating water off the respiratory system, but our evaporative cooling pads can interfere with their ability to cool themselves. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people is that the more airspeed we have, the more heat I'm pulling off the bird through the air movement, the less they have to pant to cool themselves. So they more airspeed, more I'm removing heat, the less they have the need to pant, the less they really care about the humidity. And it's interesting, you get a house up to 80 or 85%, 80 degrees and 85% humidity, that can be severe heat stress for the bird. But if I'm moving air over that bird at 600 feet per minute, it's comfortable.
It's taking that part out of it.
Yeah. Right. We're reducing the negative effect of humidity. It's still not great. But the only reason we can use evaporative cooling is airspeed. Because without air movement over those birds, evaporative cooling doesn't help the birds. The temperature goes down, humidity goes up, so you're helping and hurting at the same time. It's the airspeed that makes it possible to use that evaporative cooling as our last sort of means of cooling the birds.
Yeah. So if somebody's airspeed is not where it needs to be, then the way to correct that is to add more fans.
Essentially, yes. You know, if your airspeed is low, it's a couple of things. Well, is it a maintenance issue? Do we have loose belts? Do we have worn pulleys? Do we have dirty evaporative cooling pads? So you could have a low airspeed because of that. But if all of that is working right and you still don't have the airspeed, then yeah, the next thing is you have to add fans.
And let's be honest, I mean, and Mike and I have ridden around together for 2 days now, and, you know, a lot of the fans that are in these houses are the same ones that they were built with. And so out of 8 different farms, there was one that was pulling 600. One. Some of the houses didn't have any birds, and some did. But, I mean, you know, we did all the tests, and we had one that was pulling 600.
And 600 is on the lower side of what you wanted, because
right.
You said 600 to 800
minimum.
But they were there. Just so that is just the airspeed is a major issue, or in a lot of or it could be not. I won't say issue.
No,
that might be a little strong, but
I think a lot of it is airspeed uniformity. Mm-hmm. These all of the houses had 600 feet per minute
somewhere.
You know,
yeah,
it's a matter of, do all of the birds get 600 feet per minute airspeed? That's what we're looking for. We say we want 600 feet per minute for every bird in the house. So there are plenty of houses that had 600 feet per minute right down the middle of it, but there are a number of others that only had 300 feet per minute over near the sidewalls. So there's a lot of birds that aren't getting that cooling that we really need.
So along those lines, and I thought this as soon as you said it while we were in the barn, when the birds are experiencing those conditions, will they tend to congregate in those areas where the premium airflow is or not? And what I'm wondering there is, are they going to move towards the air and create heat pockets by all bulking up in one spot?
That's an interesting thing. If there's a... Back in the days when we used circulation fans, there was a very distinct air movement, no air movement. So you'd go in the house and you'd be by a fan, then you move 2 feet, you don't feel it. In those situations, the birds would tend to pile in front of the fans because it was so clear when they moved a foot, all of a sudden the air was blasting over them, they did tend to really pack. In most tunnel houses, the airspeed changes slowly, so it's not as dramatic, the packing effect that you see in those situations. So I'm not saying you don't see it, but you don't see it as much. But the fact that we have, if you think of the middle of the house, okay, a third of the house had 600 feet per minute, but two-thirds of the house had 400, 300, maybe 500 feet per minute. And the birds, even if they're perfectly spread out, that's fine. They're still not getting enough what we really would like to see when it comes to cooling. You know, it's hot weather ventilation, again, it's whoever has the most airspeed wins. And when we're talking airspeed, we're talking the uniform airspeed. You know, that's the key. And 20 years ago, and our very first tunnel houses in the early 90s, we were shooting for 350, 400 feet per minute. And we were thrilled to get it. And then people say, well, it keeps on going up. It keeps on going up. Well, part of it is our birds keep on growing faster. And we're growing bigger birds mm-hmm. as an industry. You know, back when I started, you know, a five-pound bird was a monster. And now you're looking at, you know, six is a lot of times, other than fast food birds, you're looking at, for the older birds, six is a small sort of smallish bird. We have one complex near us, and they're growing 10-pound birds. Mm. And and those are the complexes that everybody's learning, is that birds are growing faster, which means they're producing more heat. We're growing them bigger, which means there's more pounds of meat in the house. So all of that has led for an increase in airspeed. So when these, a lot of these houses in this area, when they're first built, like they just in North Georgia, mm-hmm. you know, 20 years ago, 20 some odd years ago, 500 feet per minute. Yeah, it's not bad, 400 feet per minute. But now, even when they're new, they're 500 feet per minute, but now they're a little age and the airspeeds are dropping and you're going, well, they're just not keeping up. It's, people say, I'm doing the same thing, but I'm doing worse. Well, because the bird you're dealing with is constantly changing. And we view the bird as a static thing. The 2023 broiler is the same as the 1990 broiler. No, they're it's a different beast. And that's what we have to read, is that the houses have to evolve because the bird is evolving and the market's evolving.
So if I'm understanding you right, as you have that fluctuation in air speeds across the house. I know we were looking at relative humidities today, like 65-66%. I guess the way I'm understanding you is that as that air speed changes throughout the different parts of the house, the effects of that humidity may be greater in one part of the house than the other. Is that?
That's a very good point. What if I were to measure the temperature in the middle of the house and measure it in the sidewall, and say, there's only 1 or 2 degree difference. It's one, but those birds are a lot hotter because the airspeed is so much lower. You know, our controllers don't read effective temperature, they read actual air temperature. So though the thermometer might say there's only a 1 degree hotter near the sidewall, when the airspeed is half as much, you're looking, your cooling could have been reduced by 80%. So it's a big dramatic change. That, you know, it would be nice in a perfect world if our thermometers read the effective temperature. Because you'd say, boy, you know, it's 80 in the middle, it's 92 in the sidewall. Because mm-hmm. that's what we would actually be looking at in a lot of houses when we lose that airspeed.
Yeah, and a lot of our sensors, and this is something that I noticed as we visited houses, a lot of our sensors were in the middle of the house.
Right.
And they don't need to be in the middle of the house. They need to be on the sides, either attached to one of the water lines or feed lines or something that is over there where a lot of the birds congregate. You know, you and I were talking yesterday, and I were asking you about why we put our feed and water lines the way we do, but it's more about the convenience of getting the birds out, a mechanical kind of a deal.
Right.
And over in Europe, they probably have another feed and a water line or both or something in between. You know, to kind of spread those birds out a little better than what we do.
Right. It's always interesting to see what other countries do, where we tend to group our feeders and drinkers together, where a lot of other countries you see it goes feeder, drinker, feeder, drinker, feeder, drinker across the house, and everything's evenly spaced. And our houses are naturally always going to be a little warmer near the sidewall in the summertime and a little cooler near the sidewall in the wintertime. And when we're trying to ventilate during hot weather, we're trying to look after what? The warmest birds. I'm not worried about chilling birds, you know, the last few days, for sure. Mm-hmm. And so we know a couple of things is that we want to manage our birds off of the warmest birds, which means we want to be looking at, are the birds on the sidewall comfortable? It's getting back to the airspeed. I don't need to measure the airspeed in the middle of the house because they're going to be fine.
Right.
I'm most interested is what is the airspeed over there towards the sidewall? If I have 600 feet per minute near the sidewall, those birds are fine. I'm not going to have any problem. But if I have 600 feet per minute in the middle, I might be okay on the sidewall, might not know. You know, I might not, because the airspeed on the sidewall peak a lot lower. So when it comes to managing a tunnel house, you think, where do we manage? We tend to manage off, we want to manage the birds towards the sidewalls of the house and towards the back end of the house, because those are the warmest locations. If the birds near the sidewall towards the tunnel fan end of the house are comfortable, the rest of them will be fine.
On the expense of the fan, so if somebody's having or, you know, considering or needing to add fans to increase that airspeed in there, I mean, what is a approximate cost for these fans?
That's the challenge, is especially recently. You know, it's one of these things that if you don't keep up with the price of the fans, you think, oh, yeah, what's a fan? For years, it was probably $1,000, $1,200 for a fan. Nowadays, it's probably $1,700, $1,800 for a fan. Mm-hmm. And then you have to install the fan. When you start adding it all up, every fan you add is going to, you know, you're going to be pushing $3,000.
Yeah.
And in most of these houses, if it's a really good fan, you'll probably get maybe 50 feet per minute in the neighborhood per fan, maybe 60. Wow. So if you're sitting there around 450, you're looking, okay, I'm going to need to add, you know, two or three fans. And then you're going, okay, now is my electrical service capable of adding two or three fans? And a lot of these electrical services, they're undersized right now. You're only supposed to really have one tunnel fan per breaker. And most of these houses had two tunnel fans per breaker. And we saw it today where some of the breakers are running 140, 150 degrees, which means, you know, they're that close to tripping. You know, a common practice is to put a fan on the breaker, you know, on the panel. And you're going, honestly, if the panel is sized right, you don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying don't do it, but it's telling you, if you have to blow a fan over your panel to keep your breakers cool, you need to upgrade that panel. And that's what we're seeing. What's happened on some of these houses is over the years, they put in a little bigger fan. When years ago, when we put in 48-inch fans, each one only maybe used 900 watts. And you put two of them on a circuit, it was a little tight and okay. But no, now they say, I'm going to replace that 48 with a 52, a 54. Those fans don't use 900 watts. They use 12, 13, 1,500 watts. So you've increased the load on each of those breakers, maybe 30 or 40%. And they were tight to begin with. So you look at the panel boxes, they're all full already. You have doubled up fans. You go, now we have to put a sub panel on that. And you go, okay, that's more money. And you go, well, if I keep on adding fans, now I need to add some evaporative cooling pad eventually. That's going to add some more cost. And so it is a very, it's easy for me to say, you need more airspeed. But it's not a cheap thing to do. You know, when you start adding
a domino. Yeah, right. There's a lot of other things that it affects, just not just the fans, but electric service and pad space and, you know, all these things.
And that's the difficulty.
Yeah, and that's where the roadblock is.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, that's where it's, you know, oftentimes it's not that the producer doesn't want to do that or to, you know, but it just, it's hard to,
it's cost prohibitive.
Yeah, it really is. It's hard to do that sometimes, and when you're trying to manage your profits and losses, and it becomes a difficult thing. And you know, hopefully there's some grants out there that are available. I know a few years back we had some grants, folks that got some the grants to help them improve
energy efficiency.
I couldn't think about it. Yeah. Those grants, and I know that those are very helpful to a lot of people, and hopefully maybe some of that will be available. I think that some of those grants are available now still. It's just really competitive.
At one time, we had two sources. We had both USDA and then through our Governor's Office of Ag Policy, or Kentucky Office of Ag Policy now, there were matching monies that mm-hmm. could go along with mm-hmm. those. And we saw across a lot of different commodity yeah. producers taking part of that, whether it was grain dryers or in the poultry houses. Mm-hmm. One question I have about especially fans in some of these older houses, have they degraded over time? Is that why they're not blowing the air, or did they just not blow that much air to begin with and we didn't need it at that time? I'm wondering if there's other things that producers can do maintenance wise on these fans to keep them up over time, whether it's belts wearing out and need newer, tighter belts, or what the case may be.
A big part of it is that they just weren't, you know, the requirements of the birds have changed so much.
That's right.
You know, that's a big chunk of it, is that these houses never had a tremendous airspeed, but the birds didn't need it. And we're talking on one of the farms today, you have to understand that not having enough airspeed won't hurt you every flock. You know, and we visited a farm, so they lost a lot of birds. You're saying, well, that airspeed, and then you had the birds were market age and you had this hot weather. So a lot of times that's the tricky thing with the fans. It doesn't hurt you every flock, and it doesn't hurt you in the wintertime, mm-hmm. but the risk is there. And every year that you have too low of an airspeed, you're rolling the dice again and rolling the dice again. So, and eventually it's going to bite you. But so, you know, part of it is they never had the airspeed. Part of it is the fans over time, they do lose some of their air moving capacity. We always, what my experience is, say like an old 48 inch fan, when they're brand new, they probably on a good day with everything perfect move, you know, maybe 18,000-19,000 CFM. Over when they're at the end of 20 years, I don't care what you do to them, they all seem to be moving around 15,000-16,000 CFM. Mm-hmm. So you know. Some of it is the blade starts to flex, the housing's not right, the shutters aren't quite right, and all that sort of degrades. The other thing you have to watch out for is as we try to get more and more airspeed, the pressure goes up. And, you know, that's one of the big messages when we're looking at these farms is the more airspeed we have, the more pressure required of those fans, because it takes work and pressure to pull the air down the house quickly. And a lot of the old fans just don't hold up well under pressure. Sure. They just aren't powerful fans. And that's probably one of the biggest differences in the last 20 years is these fans that we have today are just much more powerful. They're able to work under higher loads, which makes them capable of generating the high air speeds. A lot of the old fans can't. They just weren't good pressure fans. Mm-hmm. So most fans, it's like how many of people have a 20-year-old iPhone? You know, technology...
yeah. Yeah,
keeps on changing, and right. you're getting, it gets better and better or better with fans and things like that. So some of it is they're bigger fans, they're more energy efficient. You know, mm-hmm. if you look over the last 20 years, you know, the amount of air our fans move, a typical fan we put into the poultry house, its CFM now is about 50% more than it was before. And you're looking at, that's just, they're bigger fans moving more air. The old days, 20,000 CFM was a good tunnel fan. Now they're 30,000 CFM. You know, so just they're bigger fans. And from an energy efficiency standpoint, yes, they use more power, but from a CFM per watt, they're probably 25% more energy efficient mm-hmm. than they used to be. So there comes a time after a fan's about 20 years old, and you're getting there, okay, it's getting time to start looking at time to replace. And I know it's expensive. And I know, you know, you have to start replacing 8-10 fans. But after 20 years, usually...
got the life out of it.
Yeah.
Mike, has bird density changed from back when folks, say, when they built the houses to now? You know, the number of birds that they put in the houses. Has that changed any, or has that held pretty constant this whole time?
That's a very good question. I think the birds have changed more than the density has changed is probably what it is. You know, right. The size of a bird we're growing, the speed of the bird we're growing, what we need in terms of environment. You know, we need dry litter. We want good paws. We want low ammonia. There's so many things that our demands are much higher, and the bird is in many ways a little harder than it used to be. Mm-hmm. So the density, the pounds per square foot, hasn't changed dramatically. But, you know, again, you're looking early 90s, a 5-pound bird was big, and now a big bird is 10 pounds.
Yeah. And genetics have changed so much.
Right. Sure. And we're growing these. It's just unreal. I still remember one of my first newsletters on tunnel ventilation, where we did our first study, tunnel versus conventional. Our birds, we had 49-day-old birds, and we were at 5 pounds and about a 2.1 feed conversion. And to put that in perspective now, I was talking to one grower. They grew them at, it was more like 56 days. They were 9.7 pounds and a 1.7 feet conversion.
Yep.
It's just amazing what our industry has done. And, you know, one of the biggest beneficiaries is the public. You know, it's even with high prices in the past, recently, you know, chicken is still, it's much more of a bargain than it was, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, so it's, we're growing them faster, we're more efficient, and so it makes it a little harder on the farmers to produce these birds, because they're a little tougher, you know, growing big and all that. But we're just so much more efficient. You just think about, I think we talked about last time I was here, about how much farmland we need to produce a pound of meat now versus we did 20 years ago. You know, it's amazing success story, you know, that, and and it's true probably of, I'm not as well versed with all the other aspects of agriculture, but you know,
it's the same
type of thing.
No, but it is, because you have less farmers, less ground, and we're producing more every year, whether it be in chickens or whether it be corn and soybeans. I mean, but that's been happening, and for the same reason, is with the technologies increasing to be able to do what they need to do and to produce what we need to produce. That's the only way we can do it, because we're not growing any more land.
Right. Right.
I mean, that's not possible. And so the only way to do that is
grow more on less.
Yeah.
Right.
And it takes technologies to do that. And,
right.
And, but it takes money to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's back to what you were talking about. Mm. It's, like you said, that domino effect. It's you're not going to just buy that fan and it take care of it.
Right.
And so then it becomes almost like, you know, it's, you got to do this priority thing, and where do you start? I think that can be overwhelming, I'm sure, because it's like, what do we get the fan, or do we change, you know, to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place to be able to handle the fans. And obviously you probably can't do all that in 1 year. And from a financial standpoint, that may be difficult. And so just trying to figure out the priority and what needs to be done, but that takes planning and organization. And I'm going to get this in so that I can do this, then I can do this, and spreading those costs to make the improvements, and just know that it's not going to happen in 1 year. It may take 5 years to do that.
And we saw on a number of the farms, you're going, yeah, they need more fans, but you're going, okay, let's make sure what we have is running efficiently. We saw, you know, a good number of worn belts, understandable. We saw a good number of worn pulleys, and you're going, okay, you know, on a lot of these farms, we might not have gotten up to 600 feet per minute, but we could have picked up 50, 100 feet per minute.
That's what I was asking about before, is, you know, replacing pulleys from time to time, checking belts, tightness of belts.
Right. It's not going to get us all the way, a lot of times, where we ideally want to be, but we could be sitting in a farm with 400 feet per minute airspeed. We could get it back up to 5, and you say, okay, let's get those belts checked, the shutters clean. Let's clean the evaporative cooling pads. We saw a couple farms today, you know, you have these evaporative cooling pads that are just clogged with dust. That makes it that much harder on those fans. And like I said, these fans just aren't quite as strong as our modern fans. So we have to sort of baby them a little bit, make sure our pads are clean and all that. And I don't want, personally, I'm not a believer in adding fans until I make sure I know what I've got right now is really doing all that it can.
And most of the time, it's not, I would say.
Right. It's
Those little details that get overlooked.
One of the tools that Mike had was a tachometer, where he could, you know, tell exactly what the fans were turning. And then you could look on the rating and make sure and look it up on the internet and just see what it's supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of fans that were, 100, you know, they were much less than they were supposed to be.
Right. And that's the nice thing. We're talking about technology. You know, my laser tech that I bought, 5 years ago was like $250. And last year I found one on Amazon for $30. And I have my $250 one and my $30 one. And they basically did the same thing. And you're looking at wind speed meters. And I'm looking, my first one, I still back in the 80s, that thing was $250. Mm-hmm. And now I can get this Bluetooth one that records it and all just temperature, humidity, the whole 9 yards. It was like $80.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the good news is these diagnostic tools are much more affordable. You know, prices, everything else has gone up, but at least some stuff has come down. And I think it's very important for the growers. You know, you have, $1 million invested.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these farms.
Another couple hundred would be awful handy.
Exactly.
Sure.
So, having those tools to check the wind speed, to check the fan, because on the farms, you say, okay, you have two choices. Just replace all your belts every year, or buy a $30 tachometer, measure the fan speed. If it's more than 5-10% slow, replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a much, and what you'll see is that, yes, half of your belts you replace every year because those are the ones that get used most, but the other half may be other year. So it's minimal investment.
Mm-hmm. You talked about when we was in the first house, I believe, you was talking about relative humidity versus looking at dew point temperatures. So just talk about that and explain that, because I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
And it makes sense after you explained it. It makes sense, but just talk about that for a little bit. I don't know about how much time we have left, but if you don't care there, just talk about that.
That's, dew point, wet bulb, dry bulb, all things can get very complex. But really, the message is quite simple. Dew point is a measure of the amount of moisture in the air that day. Over the course of 24 hours, unless a weather front moves through, the amount of moisture in the air doesn't really change from day to night. The problem is we're used to talking about relative humidity. That's not an indicator. It tells how full of moisture the air is. And as the temperature goes up during the day, the relative humidity comes down. So I can get up in the morning and the humidity is 90%, but that doesn't mean it's 90% in the afternoon. It's it's not a really good measure of how much moisture is in the air. So dew point temperature, I use a sort of like little guideline, is that if the dew point temperature is below 70, 65, that's dry air. You're not going to have any problems with chickens. Your pads are going to cool perfectly and all that. You go up to about 75 degrees, we're starting to get pretty sticky, humid air. Today, the dew point, here we are, it was about 75 degrees. It was sort of sticky, muggy, and all that. You get a dew point up towards 80 degrees. That means that air has a lot of moisture in it. And your evaporative cooling system isn't going to work well. And your birds aren't going to be able to cool themselves. It doesn't happen much, but it is a last summer when you all lost a bunch of birds, that dew point was pushing 80 degrees. So that's what I tell people, is that if you really want to know how much problem I'm going to have today, is follow the dew point. You don't listen to the maximum temperature. That's, because you say it's 100 degrees. Well, it's 100 degrees, but if the humidity is 20%, you're going to be fine.
Because
I could have 100 degrees with a dew point of 60 degrees, and you go, I'm not going to have a problem. So it's really, it's just a very good thing to keep in mind, dew point. And the higher the dew point, the more you better have airspeed, because the birds are going to suffer because their internal evaporative cooling pads aren't going to work well. And your house evaporative cooling pads aren't going to work well.
And that's relatively easy to find.
Right.
Well, one of the things I looked at today while we were in the house and you were going around taking those measurements, every iPhone has a local weather button on it. Mine was within one percentage point of your readings on both dew point and humidity. So a producer could look at that at any given time and get close.
There's actually an app or right. there's some okay, apps yeah. that are available. One of our producers was showing it showed temperature, showed humidity, and then it showed the dew point all in one graph. And it was, you know, right. for about 2 or 3 days there in yep. a row. So, I mean, it was spot on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could look at that and tell if you're going to have trouble. The thing about it to me is, and Mike can comment, but making plans when it starts to rise, you can make plans, you know, to what are you going to do when mm-hmm. the dew point gets closer to 80? Well, I mean, what's your course of action going to be?
And that, and the forecast, you can look at that. I mean, I know it's ever changing, and I know, but usually, you know, within 3 days, once you get closer into that 2 and 3 days, a lot of times they've got a whole lot more confidence in what that's really going to be what's going to happen. Yeah. Obviously, that can change by right. storms, weather system moving in, something like that. But that is something that you can see out at least 2 or 3 days mm-hmm. To be able to help you prepare for that. And, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
and that's the name of the game.
Yeah.
You know, when it gets that hot and the dew point is that high, we've got to have airspeed. If you don't have airspeed, you don't really have much to combat that situation yeah. with. And that a lot of times is when you start to lose those birds.
And you know that in...
And especially when they get to that market age.
Right. right.
And where we live, it's not going to be that way every day. But there's right. going to be a stretch of weather that it's going to be every summer.
Yep. And you roll a dice, like Mike said, you just roll a dice whether you're going to get caught with big birds yeah. or not.
Well, I was thinking that today when we were in that empty house. I thought, you know, if you could plan a time to have an empty house, July would be it in this part of the world.
Yeah. Well, the dew point, again, it's all about prevention. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the weather forecast, say, oh, we got some weather coming. Okay, I better make sure. Let me check those fans. Let me check those pulleys. Let me get mm-hmm. some prevention going. Because by the time the afternoon hits, there's not much you can do. It really is about prevention.
Well, and like you said, if you could just do those little things and go from 400 to 500,
yep.
that's going to make a big difference in those situations.
I always tell people, you know, going from 700 to 800 feet per minute, that's good. It's nice and all that. But going from 3 to 4, 4 to 5, that's a huge
game changer
difference when it
can
comes
be.
To cooling mm-hmm. birds.
And we actually visited a house that had big birds in it, and I don't think they were pulling as much as they thought they were pulling when we actually checked it over by the sidewalls, you know, by in between that the last water line and the feed line, mm-hmm. you know, that's where we have been checking in it. And I just don't think that they really understood that it was that low. You know, I think they thought they were pulling way more than they were pulling.
Oh, I do too.
And I think that was a theme of our visits the whole time you've been here.
Well, right. I wasn't there yesterday, but I think last year, I go back to last year on those visits that we did, and I remember when you checked that, I mean, you could see the surprise in everybody's face that they yep. thought it was much higher than that.
Yep.
It's just a matter of not knowing.
Well, that always brings us to a timely tip, and Jay, I think you've got the timely tip for us this week.
We always wrap the show up with a timely tip, and based off all the discussion that we had today on the visits and some of what we've had here today is, you know, producers really need to be measuring wind speed in various points in their houses to identify the inconsistencies in that air movement. Mike, won't you just touch real quick on the three places you would really like to see folks taking those airspeed measurements?
Well, I'm going to make it easier. I'm going to give you two spots.
There you go.
Okay. You know, what we want to be is to be about 50, between a 50 and 100 feet from the fans. We don't want to be anywhere near any curtain in the house. So if any partial house curtain or everything, I want to be at least 75 feet from that. So you're looking for towards the back of the house, away from any curtains. And then what you're going to do is you're going to check the airspeed between the outside water line and drinker line. I'm going to go to one side of the house. I'm going to measure it about 4 or 5 feet off the ground. I'm going to get me a good average. And then I'm going to go to the other side of the house and measure that. I'm not going to measure it in the middle of the house. I know those birds are fine. I am really concerned about this airspeed on the sidewall. So we could run all over the house and measure all these velocities. You go, no, I'm going to look for my trouble birds. If you think about it, we're not looking for the maximum airspeed. We're sort of more interested in the minimum airspeed mm-hmm. because that's where we're going to lose birds. So our, generally speaking, our average or our birds that we're concerned about are by the outside drinker line. And if I could get 500-600 feet per minute over there, I feel pretty good. Would like to have more, sure. But I'm looking, if I can get 500-600 feet per minute by that, between the outside drinker line and feed line, I feel comfortable that when that hot spell comes, I'm going to be able to keep my birds pretty cool.
That's hard to find, too.
Yes.
Over the last 2 days, we haven't found that very much.
It is, but you got to keep looking for it.
Yeah, that's right. And two, I think it, Mike, and he touched on it several times, but we want it uniform all across the house. We don't just want it on the sidewalls and not in the middle. I mean, it needs to be all the way across the house. So I think that's something that's obtainable, but you've got to do some tweaking, and you got to figure out how to make that happen. And maybe some maintenance is what it's required. If you can get 50 or 100 more, you sure want to try to do that for sure.
I guess the big thing is we know that it's not a constant. It's going to change. Mm-hmm. It's going to, be moving. How often should folks be checking that? Is that a weekly thing? Is that a daily thing?
I would be happy, quite frankly, if at least people checked it, at the beginning of a summertime flock or maybe halfway through, because it really is about preparation. I can't express that enough. You get a hot day in the middle of the afternoon, you say, my birds are hot. What can I do about it? Not much.
Yeah. You need to know you have the problem before you get there. And that makes sense.
I've got to clean the pads. It's hard to do when I have a bunch of birds in there. I'm trying to clean the pads. Yeah. Or I've got to change a belt. That means I got to turn that fan off. Do I want to turn that fan off in the middle of the afternoon or
probably
change
not.
A pulley or thing like that? So it really is about prevention, making sure, in between flocks, measure that airspeed. And again, there's nothing wrong that walk in the house and check the airspeed in the afternoon, but it's really more about let's check it when the birds are 3-4 weeks old before the hot weather hits and say, oh, I didn't know that fan was out. I didn't know this was happening.
Yeah. Or in between flocks.
Yep.
That's even better.
Exactly.
To do some preventative maintenance, but in between flocks, that would be a real ideal time to do that.
I thought about that while we were in that empty house. How much does having a flock in there change that humidity level? Because as long as those birds are their respiration systems are working, they're pumping water out into the air.
But again, it gets back to airspeed. If I'm whipping the air down that house at 600 feet per minute, it's in and out in less than a minute, no problem. If I have 400 feet per minute or 300 feet per minute, all of that becomes a problem. It really is that simple. The more airspeed I have, the more I just sit back and watch the birds, and they're going to be fine.
Yeah. I really just wanted to give you one more opportunity to say that before we left.
Education.
That's kindly been the focal point of the day and of the show. We appreciate you being here. We want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.
You're so smooth.